Welcome to the actual very first episode of Does Your Favorite Song Suck, where we revisit great songs from the 80s and 90s, and then we find out if they actually suck.
Do they suck?
That's what we find
out. Maybe they suck, maybe they don't.
My name is Spencer Owen, and I'm the host of this program, and joining us for this episode and, you know, whenever possible, other episodes is my benefactor, Kaylin Egan.
And talented benefactor.
Kaylin Egan, the host of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck?
Where, of course, yes, hello. Hi, I'm Kaylin Egan. We also have another guest with us today. Let's not neglect that guy.
No, we certainly can't and shouldn't. His name is Matt Robison. Hello.
A veteran of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck. I think, Matt, you've been on two episodes.
Have I? Oh, yeah, I have.
Partially.
You're right, I have.
Isn't that weird?
And and I believe that, Matt, you were the first guest on Does Your Favorite Movie Suck?
Yeah.
The first non-Kaylin and Travis guest.
It's true. He was the very first sort of accidental guest, because a guest of passion more than a guest of intent.
Mm-hmm.
But let's not relitigate that.
Yeah,
now.
Let's not talk about that.
Why are we going down that rabbit hole?
A guest of passion.
Guest of passion.
I think that's what we have here as well.
Well, I would call it two guests of passion, and one host of considerable
glory. Glory and fame and infamy and
yeah.
But I am a Spencer Owen enthusiast, I will say, in general.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why I'm here mostly.
Most definitely. Oh, I mean, Spencer's the man for this show, no question. So to do a quick sort of recap about where we are in the pantheon of Does Your Favorite franchise. Travis and I and Spencer sort of did an off the cuff episode of this where we kind of tested the format, and I feel like that went so well as we had hoped that it would, and people responded to it really nicely that we thought, okay, good, well, it worked, and now we can just do the show now. And so we're going to call that episode sort of episode zero. It was a test, it was a demo, and now this one, I think, is really where the magic happens.
I mean, it hasn't happened in any
way
yet.
We've ironed out the formula to a T.
Yes.
That one half an hour really polished up this concept.
And it made me realize, you know, I hope I don't get too self-conscious as I speak when we make this podcast, because I guess I'm going to be the host of this thing going forward. And
try to just lean in.
I'm going to be the host of this program going forward, and I'd really like to, you know, say things that are relevant and interesting, and try to use some of the knowledge I've gained over the years.
Relevant and interesting, if not always accurate.
Which is,
you can't help it, man.
It's totally true.
That's the format.
For instance, I might have said within the last 5 minutes of the episode zero that Michael Jackson was alive. I didn't really intend to say that.
You might have said Michael Jackson's one of the greatest living artists.
Yeah, that's right. I may have.
We all knew what you meant.
I may have said that. I think people really did probably just know what I meant. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to I don't think I could have let this go anyway. I just had to say I was on a weird posthumous Michael Jackson kick. I was watching the This Is It movie that Travis actually brought up like 3 days before we recorded.
Right.
And I was listening to his most recent posthumous album on the way to the fucking recording.
And you're just thinking to yourself, I'm so glad this guy's still with us.
Yeah, I was like, even though, by the way, that album is a nightmare, very bad. But it was still like, it was still very much in the forefront of my mind. I was like, guy,
I mean,
he's with
unfolding.
Us. That's why I'm using, the mystery.
So let me just say, like, what I think that we should restate here is that the concept of this show, as with Does Your Favorite Movie Suck, is to look at important or popular or even in some cases forgotten hit songs.
That's right. Only hits.
Yeah, only hits. We're pulling these from the sort of Billboard Top 100 songs of any given year. And it's an off-the-cuff kind of revisit to those songs where we're going to find out what the title is in a moment here of our first song. Then we're going to listen. We're going to talk about how we feel about it, if we know much about it, if we don't, where it came in our lives. Go listen to it, which we encourage you to do as well. You should go pause the show or take 3 minutes or whatever to listen to whatever song we're about to talk
or
about.
Or 8 minutes if it's Champagne Supernova by Oasis, for example. You might have to take
fingers
that long.
Fingers crossed.
That's
fingers
right.
Fingers crossed. And then we'll come back and talk about it for like 20 or 30 minutes. That's it. That's the whole show.
That's the entire show. That's the whole gig.
What a great idea for a show.
And the idea, yeah, and hopefully it's sort of to get to the root of not just nostalgia, but you know, the reason that Spencer is leading the charge on this thing is because he has, I think I can say this without making him embarrassed, a deep wealth of musical knowledge, both trivial and professional, where, you know, he knows a whole lot about this stuff. And so, you know, maybe these songs that were important or that you had first encountered as a young man, you would have a different feeling about now and be able to speak with intelligence about what the difference is.
I feel like, yeah, and I feel like what makes this format fun for me is that I, you know, I think I have a pretty good knowledge of popular music from the decades of the 80s and the 90s, but there might be some stuff that completely got buried in the process, and yeah. we might all realize that we know more about that, this thing that we pull out of nowhere than we think. We're also going to use the random, by the way. We're going to use a random, just like with your favorite movie suck, we're going to choose the songs at random.
Yes.
From
always at random.
And from the top 100s of each year on Billboard.
And I wanted to say also, you know, one of the things, because when you think about it, that's 2,000 songs that we're talking about pulling from. I bet you there are cases, especially from certain eras, where maybe we don't know anything about those songs.
That'd
and I'm
so fun.
And I'm hopeful that that will be also an access point to an era that we don't think about very much, or something that was popular at a time that hasn't lasted. I'm kind of as interested in that as anything else.
I'm going to get more excited if it's a song I've never heard or don't remember ever hearing, because the way I primarily listen to music is listening to songs or music I've never heard before.
Yeah.
That's kind of like as a listening experience. I actually value the random and never heard more than I value revisiting music that I love already, that I know I love.
And you've actually, this is great. I meant to bring this up. I thought a few days ago that we should talk about this as a way of kind of identifying yourself and establishing your interest or ability for this is, you know, Spencer was saying to me, he actually, there are very few at this point albums that you re-listen to really at all, and that's not a part of your consumption anymore.
It's kind of true. I mean, I have a record collection at home, but my brain doesn't work very much. Like, of course, I'm not completely divorced from the feelings of pleasure that are derived from listening to a song you like.
Yeah, yeah.
I do like that feeling a lot. But I do also, like, I look at my shelf of, you know, several hundred records, and I'm like, my wife's and I record collection, and I'm like, I don't even know, like, I want to listen to a record. Oh, that's all I know. I want to listen to a record. And if someone just walked up to me and handed me a record I never heard of and said, why don't you listen to this one? I'd be like, great. And I'd put that on before I would put on any of the other ones in those moments.
Right.
In those moments where that's where I'm feeling. That is why, recently, I took a Google Docs spreadsheet out, wrote down every single record, album, and 7-inch and 12-inch that we own, and I would say at least half the time when I put on a record, I use that spreadsheet and a random number generator to listen to a record.
He was doing this independently of this show. This is just how he's decided to re-listen to his collection.
This is legitimate.
And you also said to me, I mean, that's incredible, and you also said to me, you know, my standard for buying a record is not, will I cherish this and listen to it over and over? It's, will I ever listen to this twice?
Like, I might, sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, do I think I might listen to this again in the future?
Yeah.
Which,
an incredible standard.
I might buy it.
Yeah. I love that.
but that makes it sound like I buy everything. If I really don't.
No, buy, that's a high benchmark.
Yeah,
that's the point.
I don't buy a lot of records because it's just, anyway, I'm starting
We're gonna
to sound
learn
like
so
I'm like,
much about Spencer. That's the thing that you don't, maybe you know this, maybe you don't, but like this show for the movie show that I do, it's so fucking stupid because it's so obvious, but I was stunned at how biographical it is.
Yeah.
You just wind up spilling your life.
And I don't want to sound like I'm like I don't want to be like, man, like I'm definitely a savant, right? Like, listen to me talk about this.
No.
It's definitely not the way I want to come off. I just want to like.
No. Well, that's and that's
explain why this format works.
No, you're going to be a great host because you have a lot of interesting opinions and insight into a lot of things that are not entirely or exclusively music related. And the more people hear you, kind of take them through this experience and process. I just think it's the best possible filter for you to talk about anything or whatever happens to come out of it.
Okay, I'm completely desperate to get a song going. I really just want to hear.
All right, so
what we do,
we randomly select a number between 1 and 2000.
Yeah. And I just did that.
And what number did you come up with, Spencer?
1957.
1957.
So what
Holy
we're
shit.
Getting Whoa. Here
so
is
So that's 1990.
We're getting 1999.
Oh,
we're getting 1999 and the 57th most popular song.
So this is the 57th most popular song
of
1999.
Yeah.
Now
this, we're, I mean,
for our age range, this is a really important year.
I'd make a huge bet that we all know what this
hugely
song is.
Important. I mean, I don't. So it's going to be like every time we try to figure out like what songs were out during these years before we even like select the song or something, I feel like it's going to be a fool's errand because I just don't.
Oh, no clue.
I don't have a lot of memory of that. Like, I just can't, like, I'm trying to think of 1999, and, like, the first thing I thought of was Missy Elliott for some reason, even though I don't really know.
So what do we got?
Well, I just got to pull up the Wikipedia page, go down to 57, and it's, you guys.
What is it?
The most popular country artist, solo female country artist, if not country artist, of this decade. Shania Twain.
Oh my God. Wait,
we're starting with Shania Twain.
What was the song?
It's called From This Moment On. I knew this kind of shit was going to happen. this is so fun and interesting. Because we started with the Daz Band in our Zeroth episode,
yeah.
and that was like completely in my area. I was just like
mm-hmm.
boogie soul funk
this
from
is
the early
a
80s.
Fucking challenge.
Right, you had like a huge vocabulary to draw from and everything.
I do not know this Shania Twain song.
I know nothing. I couldn't know less about Shania Twain.
You,
I mean,
me
I know. Is she Man I Feel Like a Woman?
Yes.
That's all I know.
Do you know that song?
I know nothing about Shania Twain.
Do you guys,
I know less than he does.
Do you guys know That Don't Impress Me Much?
Yes, I know two things about Shania
those
Twain.
Those are her two biggest hits, I think.
And this is not one of those.
This is not one of those. And it's number 57 of the year 1999.
Can I ask you a question? What are the two songs on either side? I'm just, not that they'll be related, but I'm just curious.
Okay, so the two songs on either side, number 56 is a Tim McGraw song, for what it's worth.
Wow.
Okay.
Called Please Remember Me. And then number 58 is Love Like This by Faith Evans, which I do know and do like.
Wow.
Lots of country.
Well, I mean, listen, I don't have a whole ton to say about this other than I guess we'll go listen to it. I mean, Shania Twain... She doesn't remain popular particularly,
yeah.
right?
No.
She's gone.
I think, I mean, I'm sure that if there's like a radio station out there that plays country music from the 90s, it's like she and Garth Brooks are like the two main artists
right.
that play on it.
Yeah,
but
I'm
like,
sure that's an XM station somewhere.
Oh, yeah. No mm-hmm. doubt about that. But I don't know this song. Let's listen to it.
Let's do it. From this moment, as long as I live, I will.
From This Moment On by Shania Twain.
I have immediate questions.
I think you should ask them. I just want to sort of fill in a bit.
Yeah.
Shania Twain had a ton of hit songs. All of them were from the album that this one is from, called Come On Over. That was the name of the album. That Don't Impress Me Much, we already mentioned. Man, I Feel Like a Woman, we already mentioned. We didn't mention You're Still the One.
Right.
Which is a huge, huge ballad in my mind. I don't remember this song at all.
Well,
I don't remember ever hearing it.
Let's begin with this.
Yeah.
I knew those songs, I would say, from commercial use. I mean, because I don't listen. Mm-hmm. I wasn't listening really to that kind of top 40 in the 90s. And
certainly
so
was I
it
not
made
also.
Its way through into the culture through, you know, advertisements and shampoo commercials and whatever else. And then,
right.
you know, you'd sort of have a vague sense of her in some, you know, ABC parade. You know, like that's how you would know about those songs.
Or the Grammys or something.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
This song... got no play because, you know, here's what I kept thinking the only time. The only analogy I could draw, because movies are all I ever think about, is like I once heard that, you know, if you make a Christmas movie, even if it sucks, you're going to make a fucking lot of money in the royalties because they got to play Christmas movies every season.
Yeah.
And so there's only so many Christmas movies. So even, you know, Four Christmases with Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon, that's going to make a lot of money because every Christmas they're going to trot that motherfucker out.
Mm-hmm.
Same with like Fred Claus or whatever that he was, you know, they kept making these. And I listened to this and I was like, wait, is it the same for wedding songs? Like, does somebody just gun for the wedding song
that
market?
That was exactly, well, I mean, I totally was like, this was written to be the first dance of a wedding song.
Yeah, oh, clearly.
Like, yeah.
And so, and then I was, as I listened to it more with that thought in mind, I was like, okay, so this is the kitchen sink approach to wedding songs. Like,
totally,
everything you put in here, there's like for the dudes, there's a guitar solo that comes out of nowhere that's totally incongruous.
Yeah.
And is that to sell it as the top pick for a wedding song
that, you know,
promoter? Whatever, you know,
that's so funny because even as you're saying this, I was watching the video out of the corner of my eye because we were YouTubing the song. By the way, 117 million views on the official Shania Twain Vivo channel for this song. You know, 18 years after it was a single. 20 years after it came out, because Come On Over came out in 1997, and this is from 1999.
Right.
They were still releasing hit singles from
so
this
does that,
album.
Okay, that's another question I had. Was this released as a single?
I can only assume so, yes.
Right.
In fact, I believe, as I was looking it up, it did come up as a single version. So, yeah.
So this basically rode on Shania Twain's, like, good... People like that album because of the couple of famous songs.
It's one of the top 10 selling albums. I believe I know that it is one of the most popular, top selling albums of the... Of all time.
Uh-huh. So...
Top 10, maybe, of all time.
That makes me think
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
This song was sort of like the, you know, the fourth or fifth single, and basically just rode on her on the coattails of the
totally.
First three
songs. That's exactly what's going on. But I didn't. She's in like a elegant gown, and like during the song when the orchestra quote unquote comes in, which is definitely a dude stabbing a keyboard with his fingers.
but in the video, represented by a lush tuxedoed orchestra,
a tuxedoed orchestra on the stairs.
Oh my god, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I didn't even once think of weddings. I didn't think
really?
Of it once because I was too. I was too, like, hung up. I was super hung up on, like, the details of the arrangement and, like, just, like, trying to think of, like, how does this fit into the current trends of popular music at that time?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was thinking, like, the first thing you hear pretty much is, like, a Latin guitar flourish. Like, a nylon string Latin guitar flourish.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely something that was going on in pop music at the time. It was going on in of course Latin music, but also going on in crossover music like
Rob Thomas.
It was going on. It was going and Santana. Come on, we can't forget what
you're
was
right.
The occasion,
Santana and Rob Thomas.
What, the occasion for the Latin flourishes.
Yeah.
But there's also so the song is not a country song at all.
No,
it's not in any way a country song. And all the other songs we just mentioned, I guess You're the One is kind of. Not really a country song either, but it's a ballad at least. So it's a certain kind of ballad that you could see a country singer more doing.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
This one is it's just her doing straight up crossover, not like you just don't think of country for a single second when you hear this song.
Yeah,
it's a big, big sappy ballad with like a sappy rock ballad.
Yeah,
it becomes a sappy rock ballad halfway through. Before that, it's a sappy R&B ballad, kind of, but like without any soul or feeling.
Who are those singers who would always do the like credits versions of like the Disney movie's biggest hit.
Oh, Peebo Bryson.
Yeah.
Totally.
And yeah. This reminded me, I was
Celine
like,
Celine Dion, of course.
Here's what this reminded me of is that, oh, in the, and maybe this is, I'm reaching, so you tell me, but I was like, oh, in the late 90s when country music became the dominant popular music, at least through most of America.
Yeah.
Did it kind of displace the role that soul had in the earlier 90s and late 80s? And is that what this is? Is that they just were like, well, we're the popular thing now, so we do these cheesy bullshit songs.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible. When I hear it, what I think is these are just gestures that are big. It's just big stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, country music doesn't have this big stuff.
Right.
It doesn't, like, and so you're like a country singer, you want to express some, like, deep devotion in a dramatic way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is that?
No, well, that's the funny. Like... Well, that's the thing is there's it doesn't suit the genre at all. It doesn't suit the singer or the producers.
Yeah,
I mean, like, and I don't know anything about this, but really, but her voice seems fucked up, like not very strong.
Yeah,
like she can't really hold it right from the beginning. She can't really hold those notes the way that I think a soul female singer might.
How did you feel about her voice, Matt Robison?
I might not be the person to ask because I almost hear nothing when I like all I could follow was the lyrics.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cliche. Like
cliche.
Like when I see, I'm not a huge country music fan, and in
nor,
any sense,
nor am I,
but what I do respect and sort of want to like about country is, the specificity of country songs.
Yeah.
Like I'm sort of like, oh, cool. This is sort of like a subculture that when you get into country music, you can understand like all the references or whatever, you know.
Well,
it's like a club you get into and it can be deeper possibly.
And to me, the pervading feeling of country music is supposed to be real, sincere, you know,
right, yeah.
Simple instruments perhaps, but just something that's very direct and to the core and to the point.
Yeah.
And not so, this sort of down. Like very broad.
Which is why, which like, really confuses me. Because listening, the other thing I wanted to ask is like listening to the production, they seem completely out of their element. They don't know what to do.
Yeah. It's out of control. It's like the Latin guitar flourishes that start the song go into like her voice. And I have to say her voice, I think is not designed for this kind of music at all. But I think she does a fine job. I think she does an admirable job with it. It's just, you know, they just have to push her voice kind of up front.
Right.
She's definitely close singing it. It's not like a backup, like backup. It's not like turn down the microphone and back the fuck up because this is going to be a,
she's going to belt it.
It's going to be a showstopper.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
it's not like that. Although it could be as it's written.
I guess that's what I would say about her voice is I thought it was technically fine, but also I felt not much emotion or sincerity in it.
Yeah. No way.
Yeah, I was
no.
being mean. I was being harsh on Olshanaya.
I think it's a generic song, but there is moments in it that are just funny. Like if you listen to the details, like we kept going like, oh, that's like a Meatloaf or like an Andrew WK kind of thing when it gets really rocky.
Yeah.
Because it's just so bombastic and slightly Baroque at times.
Yeah, it's bombastic and Baroque, but only sometimes.
Yeah,
like, that's
exactly.
The emphasis is like it's the combination of elements, and I'm not sure what segment of the song we'll play, but there's no segment. The point, perhaps, is that there is no segment of the song for 20 seconds that I could play that would tell you all the crazy dumb ideas that are in the song because they come at random places.
I was totally going to say, and thank you for saying that, because I was totally going to say that if you have any interest in listening to this song, you should listen to it from beginning to end. If you don't from the clip or what we're saying, just skip it.
Yeah.
But if you do have interest, it just kind of does a lot of stuff from beginning in. Like there's just a little bit to take it. We actually listened to it twice just to make sure. And I feel like we'll probably do that more often than
not. I think it's a good idea.
Just to kind of like take
close
in.
Read.
Yeah, exactly. Get a close read of it. We're getting a close read on From This Moment On by Shania Twain.
I started to think about weird stuff about it. Like sort of like, why From This Moment On? Like almost like, did she do something wrong? You know?
Oh yeah. It's weird,
and
right?
Like from now on, I'll be perfect.
Well, because, but it's because this is where we got married.
It's a wedding song.
We got married. Yeah. I mean, I was, totally. Here's the other thing. You know, I don't want to approach a song like this ever or anything really truly with nothing but cynicism, and I really tried to listen to it at the beginning and think this is going to sound like I'm still being elitist or something, but there are people to whom this would be really powerful and it would express their feeling fine, or at least decently. And it also hits all the kind of innocuous boxes of, they don't need a great piece of poetry to express it. They just need a song that everybody likes. Mm-hmm. And I was really trying to listen to it that way. And then it was the production things and the extra kitchen sinky elements that I was like, well, why are you fucking up that very simple, sincere thing?
So many key changes. There's at least three key changes in the song, I think. And it's like
a Christian song to me. It's basically like that. But then they add weird stuff.
And I think the key changes, to me, I read those as like, basically, we don't have much of a song.
Exactly. Here. No, like, that's actually the main reason they're used.
Yeah, yeah. So they're sort of like, okay, if we didn't have any key changes, this song would be like 40 seconds long.
Yeah.
Right. So we need to really do something, like amp it up in some way. And yeah, I mean, I suppose at a wedding, this might elicit some emotion, right? Like, if you're like actually looking at like your daughter who's getting married and you hear these words, you might be like, yeah, all right, I'm going to tear up or whatever.
Yeah, except
I know.
And I kept thinking like, well, what? I was like putting myself at that wedding. Mm-hmm. I was really trying to like sit there and be like, you know what? I like these people. Okay, I'm not their music taste is not my music taste. I don't care. It's really sweet. But then I was like, what am I supposed to do when that fucking searing electric guitar solo comes in?
You're supposed to kiss?
I was thinking
is that
like,
right?
Are they supposed to be performing this? Like, does something happen in the wedding? Like, maybe. Does the cake rise out of the floor?
Is that the cinematic moment where they, like, actually, like, kiss?
That's what I was thinking. I was like, what is this? Is this a first dance? Is this when they say, everybody come and dance?
Like, you're right. That at least one of those key changes where, like, some new element comes in. It's like, everybody come in, you know? And, yeah. Wow.
I love this reading that you guys brought to this because it really didn't occur to me at all.
I know. I noticed when you were like experiencing the song, you were sort of like you were tracking all the musical things, and like I wasn't tracking any of those things at all. I was sort of like, what is this about? Like, what is this for?
It's
where am I?
Well, I mean, it makes me a song like this makes me appreciate a songwriter who we are going to hear a lot of on this podcast, depending on how many of their songs we choose, which is Diane Warren. Oh. She's an incredibly, incredibly prolific hit maker from the 80s and 90s and onward. And she wrote like I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith. She wrote Unbreak My Heart by Toni Braxton, which is like, this song is almost like in the middle of those two a little bit, but also minus from both of them.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely like, I'm not saying I love those songs, but Diane Warren is just like, you know, you kind of, the songs stick when you hear a Diane Warren hit. It's like, it sticks, and that's why they keep hiring her over and over and over again. She had nothing to do with this song, and it's like, it shows that this song was co-written, as I was looking, it was co-written by Shania Twain and the producer of the song.
Right. Well, but you bring up a thing that I'm very interested in. What is the best version of what they're trying to do here? Like, are there songs that jump to your mind or even just writers or performers?
I want to say Meatloaf.
Yeah?
I just want to say that. No, because I love, like, we actually were just talking about this earlier today. Yeah. I love, like, a couple.
As we often do.
I love Jim Steinman's stuff sometimes, the writer of all the Meatloaf hits and classics. That's the kind of drama and, like, over-romantic drama.
Right.
And he does a thing where he packs way too many, Jim Steinman, that is, the writer, he packs way too many words into songs,
right?
But it's kind that makes it memorable in its own way. Like, there's a lot of detail. He's trying to write a character for Meatloaf.
Well,
every time
I was gonna
Meatloaf
say
sings.
they're big opuses, like they're big operatic pieces. That I guess what I mean, and maybe there is no good answer. Maybe this is just not our genre, and how would we know? We'd have to ask a wedding planner. But like, Is there a song that does what I want, what I thought I wanted this to do, that is just cleaner? And
I don't know.
I mean, the way that I get emotion about music is just specificity.
Yeah.
And when there's no specificity,
right,
I don't feel anything. And that's how I felt with this. It was just sort of like honestly, when the Latin guitar came in and then there was some kind of new agey kind of like thing, I kind of, for a second, I was like, okay, I feel a little transported. I was lying on my back listening to it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, okay. I almost thought of like Streets of Philadelphia or something. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. And then like, basically I listened to a few verses and I was like, all right.
Nothing.
I got nothing.
No, this song lies there. It's dead. It's a dead song. It's just like, it's, but you know, to three of us at least,
well,
it just lies.
I tell you mentioned Celine Dion, and you know, does she, would, in your opinion, does she do this better when she has a big super
way
hit?
Better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Way better. Yeah. I mean, I think My Heart Will Go On is a great song.
I do too.
I really like that song.
I mean, and that is of a piece. That one builds and goes and feels coherent.
Yeah, and it also ends with on. My heart will go on from this moment on.
Yes.
Beautiful. Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute. So wait. No, but this came out the year of Titanic.
That's not
so
supposed to be a big revelation. But it could, I like but how it, you gave it silence but, to think about it.
How long do you think it took to write this song? Do you think it took longer than a half an hour? And I'm not talking about production, because obviously it took them time to record it and everything. And I think all that came probably later.
No, but I think it didn't take very long. I think, and the fact that it's, I don't know who wrote the other songs in the album, but the fact that it's a co-write between the producer, who is this guy Mutt Lange, who's an incredibly, incredibly high demand pop and rock producer. And
well,
he produces
me.
He produces country and metal and stuff. Like, he produced Nickelback, I think. You know, he's just like, but you know, the pop versions of all this stuff.
But at once, this song is at once, there's way too many elements all thrown in together. Yeah. And at the same time, it feels to me utterly lazy on a production level.
Well,
because
I feel like you're just going to get that sometimes with people who are trying to make hits. Like, I really think that just like, if you're trying to make a hit that hits a market. And by the way, this song I feel like is supposed to hit multiple markets. Mm. Like, it might be hitting the wedding market primarily, but it's like weddings of many different kinds that they're
trying
to get.
That's
like,
true. It does cut through, I guess, in that way.
Yeah. Like,
I didn't think of it as a hit, though. I thought of it as filler almost.
Well, it sounds like filler.
So does
me.
That? Well, but that's, does that mean, are you saying that there are songs where their genericness is an asset?
Completely.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's number 57 in the top 100 of 1999 when we've never heard it before, because it just served a purpose for so many people, and that album was still so hot. Right. And like, you know, like this, it's just pop music. It's just pop music to be pop music. Like, it's just, you know, that. And when I say that, that is not a slight, you know, I have no negative connotation for that idea, because some of my favorite music is pop music just to be pop music.
Right.
But that's what's happening here, and why a generic song like this, which has a lot of crazy details because they're just trying to attract as many people as possible. Like, the guitar solo comes in like 2 seconds after the big climactic, you know,
string section
hit.
The fake
string section. So like, you hear the strings and you're like, oh, what's gonna happen? Is this gonna be a bridge? And then it's a guitar solo that has this like tiniest country twang to it. There's like barely anything there. But like, so like, at least the like you were saying, like the men, the macho folks,
like,
listening audience,
it's my
here
time.
Can be like, oh, there's a big thing happening. Like, you know, but
it's
I'm
not just wussy music or.
But I'm not saying that this is what happens. Right. I'm just saying that that is some version of, we can project that as the formula. We can project that that's what they were trying to. This is such a formula. It's so formula. Sure.
I hope that people don't think that we're like talking down to people either. Like, because
no,
there is a risk here with like country music and sort of that kind of thing. Because like, I just want to say, like, I was fully ready to
me too
read and get interested in a country song. Like, I was like, let's do this.
I would have liked to hear "You're Still the One." I like that song.
Right. Mm-hmm. An actual,
It's kind of a nice melody.
An actual country pop song.
Yeah.
The sort of, I mean, 99 is a funny year because, you know, I remember being friends. This was near mid high school for me. And I remember being friends with people who were into country. I was in high school in Davis and I didn't listen to that. But there were certainly people around me in a sort of cow town ish sort of a way who did. And I was like perplexed by them. I didn't understand the genre, but I knew it was hugely popular.
Yeah.
And that, so I had hoped to hear something like that. And that was not what we got today.
It's so not what we got today. We, you know what?
That's the way it's going to go, though.
You roll the
You roll the 2,000-sided dice, and you never know what number it's going to land.
There's a lot of sayings that apply here.
Yeah, one of them is,
I think
when you roll the 2,000-sided dice, you never know what number it will land on. That's a classic saying.
It's so famous.
Another one is, your favorite song sometimes maybe sucks.
If this is your
favorite song, that's a funny thing. I mean, we run into this all the time on the movie, but like on the movie show. But I suppose there are people who have imbued this with extreme emotion if it was important to them.
This is definitely the wedding song of some people, and they will always like.
And it may be their favorite song.
It's our song.
It may very, very well be their favorite song. And on that level, I really like that they have a song, but I do feel a little bit bad for them. Like, you should have a better song.
I think that I think that the title of this one being Does Your Favorite Song Suck, even though I think Does Your Favorite Movie Suck is a good title for the show, Does Your Favorite Movie Suck, and I appreciate that you guys have tried to kind of include what like sort of like associations make sense with that title rather than a literal read of it for, in every occasion.
Sure.
I think that in this case, this is probably 2000's someone's favorite song.
Yeah.
Like 2000 of someone's favorite
song. Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely it is. And I wonder if that will be even more consistent with this because taste in music is so diverse. But I would also say that to me, the answer is this song sucks. But I don't know that that's – I have this problem with the other show too. It's like I don't want to tell people, therefore you suck. It's
that's
not
why
about
I was
that.
Saying. That's why I was saying if you have interest in this song, you should listen to the whole thing because
it's
will
a little
deliver
interesting.
For
it's
you.
A little fascinating. It's a little weird.
I think it will deliver for you.
It's
if
also
you like
possible.
This.
I mean, I thought about this like because sometimes I like songs that are not great, not even very good, by an artist that I find interesting, right?
Oh, yeah.
I find an angle, you know? So it's very possible that there's people out there who love Shania Twain, and they're just thinking to themselves, these idiots don't know Shania Twain. They don't know why this is interesting in her career.
Well, maybe another Shania Twain song will come up at some point, and then we'll learn a little bit more.
It'll be
I just
want to
allow
for
that possibility, you know? Like, Shania Twain might be really great. Like, what do I know?
I think, Matt, I would love it if you open up your phone and went back to the number randomizer so that we can choose next week's song.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you guys feel content with our breakdown and analysis.
I feel content. My wrap up is the song sucks to me, but I had a perfectly fine time listening to it twice.
And thinking about it. I mean, that's actually a great point. It's odd enough in its collection of incongruous elements.
Of signifiers of popular trends
that's,
at the time.
That's
and
exactly
stuff.
That's a great way to think about it. Yeah. Is that in 99 these elements made sense.
Yeah.
They just don't cohere. And they're sappy and hacky and you know all those things.
And nobody needs a coherent song sometimes. They're like, you know, sometimes people just want sounds.
It gets the job done for what they needed to get it done.
Yep.
Okay, so the number?
Yeah.
You like it? The number is 401.
Okay, so what we're talking about
we're jumping.
Is, let me understand this, 1983? 1984?
Yes.
The number being 484.
This is fun. 401.
Right.
Is the number one song.
You're right.
Oh my God.
Of 1984.
Of 1983.
Oh, okay.
This is going to be good.
Right?
What is
because
it?
It's 400, right? And the first year is 1980. So okay. If yeah.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Am I right?
80
Am
is
I wrong?
1 year. 81 is 2.
80. All right. We may cut this out. 80 to 0 to 100 is 80.
Is 80.
100 to 200 is 81.
Yeah.
200.
Oh,
three,
so I'm wrong.
So,
it's 1984. Okay, it is.
Because I was scared because I was like, did we just do the wrong episode? Because
no, yeah, we
1900 didn't. Is 99.
1999. Okay, yes.
So,
totally.
84.
Totally.
So the number one song, the number one song of 84 is what we're talking about
now. Let's.
Do you have any vague guess or concept of what that could be, who that could be?
I'm going to guess it's a Michael Jackson
song.
That's
what I was thinking
of all things.
That's what I was imagining.
Of all things, considering how we started our discussion today.
I mean, I'm so glad he's still with us.
He's going to still be with us. Yeah. I'm going to guess he's still with us.
He's
as
our greatest
of this,
living artist.
As of this
one of.
Next episode, he's going to still be with us, is my guess.
All right.
Holy shit.
Do we got it?
No.
The number one song of 1984 is...
This is so good. When Doves Cry.
Oh my God.
My very favorite musical artist of all time.
Well, that's an episode worth tuning in
this
for.
This next one is going to be really something.
I'm yelling off the microphone.
By the way,
our next guest is Fletcher Tucker, who also loves Prince.
He'll fucking melt
and
down.
He's actually covered this song.
He's covered this song.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is going to be amazing.
This All is right. how this works.
This is how this works.
I'm going to be silent in the room while this is happening because I don't want to miss this.
From
so
Shania
fun.
To Prince. Please come back.
Come back whenever we haven't yet decided when we're releasing these, probably every 2 weeks.
Eventually.
Yeah.
It's going to be Spencer and Fletcher talking about an incredible song called When Doves Cry.
by Prince on Does Your Favorite Song Suck?